Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Today, and thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. It is Monday, June the 25th, and today's show is going to be a straight mailbag show. We are just going to answer all your questions that you have sent in to the mailbag. As I've said, pretty much since, you know, February, March or so, I've just received so many emails, and I haven't had a chance to answer them all and get through them all. And in this time of year, when things are really slow, not much happening, I figure let's plow through 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 emails per podcast and answer as many as possible. On this show, it's going to be a straight mailbag show because there's really not much to talk about, not much happening right now in the world of the Miami Dolphins. So we will get to that. And as always, if you do want to send in questions to the mailbag, I can be reached at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. Again, it is DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com, or you can send them to me on Twitter as well at DolphinsTalk. So we'll get to that. Before I do, though, and before we get to the questions, just a few other things. First off, I'd like to thank Tom, who hosted the show on Friday, and he did the fantasy football sort of preview of the Miami Dolphins players, and I would like to thank Tom. We'll be hearing more of Tom as the season gets closer, and it's always great when Tom hosts the show, and just want to give a shout-out to him. I've been asked a lot of questions on the website unveil. When is the new website, the new look of the website, going to come out? If all things go smoothly, it should be the middle of this week. So right now it's Monday, maybe Wednesday, Thursday, best-case scenario, the website will be unveiled, the new look. And I'm telling you, folks, I've seen it. I've been working with the web designer. It is amazing. We are going to have everything you possibly need if you're a fan of the Miami Dolphins. Like I said on the show last week, it's going to be your one-stop shop for all things Dolphins. If you are in the car or talking to a friend, you got a question, I wonder what blah, blah, blah is. Or I wonder what you're going to come. Just the only place you have to go is DolphinsTalk.com, and we're going to have everything at your fingertips. So be on the lookout for that, hopefully midweek. I did unveil the new logo on Twitter and Facebook. So for those of you who are on social media, I know a lot of you have heard about the show via our mentions on 560 WQAM or on our spots on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. So you might not be aware of our social media stuff. But for those of you who have heard about the show through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all that good stuff, check out our Facebook page. Check out our Twitter stuff, and you will see the new logo for the new and improved DolphinsTalk.com. So I sort of unveiled that over the weekend and put that out there. So you have an idea what the new logo is, but the site, I'm telling you, it's going to be great. And once it is unveiled, I will mention it here on the podcast, of course, and we'll go through it, and I will let you know where everything is and where some stuff is and just sort of explain why we put stuff where it is, because there's more stuff coming. I can't get into it now, but there's more stuff coming that we sort of set up on the website. So you might be like, well, why is this here? Because wait, we got some big things in the works here coming up soon. So some news on that. Also, like I said, I unveiled the logo on our Facebook page. If you haven't, check that out. Because I know most people in America under the age, I'd say, of 40, they have a Facebook page. Check us out on Facebook. We're going to start to do more with that. We've had a Facebook page for a while, but we really haven't done much with it. In the coming weeks and months, we're going to do some stuff with our Facebook page. We're going to have some questions. We're going to have some contests, some games. We're going to be handing out prizes. We're going to make it more interactive. So if you haven't checked out our Facebook page, take a few seconds. Go on Facebook, put in DolphinsTalk.com. and like our page, follow our page, all that good stuff, because you're going to want to be a part of that. Because with the new website, we're tying in some other stuff, and this is going to be one of the things we're going to start tying in. The Facebook page is going to start to grow, be more interactive, and we're going to do more things with that. And you're going to want to be following that and making sure you are aware of what's happening with our Facebook page. So check that out as well. So all the housekeeping stuff's out of the way. Let's get to the mailbag. And we got a little smorgasbord of questions here. Probably got, I don't know, 9 or 10 questions. So we're going to try to plow through a lot of them today and talk about, you know, a variety of subjects. Because I'm just pretty much heading through the mailbag and looking at random emails. There's like 1,000 emails, folks, between, I would say, February-ish till now. There's like 1,000 emails. Most of them, well, I wouldn't say most, some of them are people saying kind words to the site, I enjoy your site and stuff, which is great, and I will try to reply to each one of those with a quick response. But some of them are just questions, people sending in questions, because I have sort of been promoting the mailbag for, you know, weeks and months, and I just never got to it. So I have a bunch of questions people have asked, and I'm going to try to respond to as many as possible. And like I said, this time of year, it's so slow. We will try to get through a few of these questions each show. Some shows might be more than others, but let's jump right into it. The first question is from Eric in Tampa. It says, how can HBO use Miami's logos and other teams' logos on the TV show Ballers without the permission of the Miami Dolphins? I don't think they ever granted them that. That's actually a good question. And I wasn't sure of the answer, but I did look it up for this show. And I found out how HBO sort of got around that. And there's two reasons. And one of them is just, and this is a legit reason, so I'm not even making this up or trying to be, you know, like a wise ass about it. Everyone loves The Rock. Literally, everyone loves The Rock. And The Rock is sort of in charge of the TV show Ballers. And because it's his show and everyone loves The Rock, nobody really said anything or nobody ever really batted an eye or said, this is an issue. Everyone loves The Rock. So that's one of the things. The other thing in play here is, I guess, per copyright law, I guess it's called fair use. And by no means am I a lawyer and do I know all the ins and outs, but just from doing a little research on this, using an NFL team's logo is not like against the law, and you don't need the NFL's permission or the permission of a team, as long as you're using the logo in a way that doesn't damage the parties. And while you think, well, that show is a little racy at times, it crosses lines at times, in scenes where they have the logo, it really doesn't. And the examples they state are, there's one scene where you see The Rock, sort of like a flashback scene where The Rock is in the Miami Dolphins uniform and he sacks a quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. Well, that is something that could really happen on a football field. So one player for one team sacking another player on another team, that falls under the fair use of how logos can be used in the NFL or the Miami Dolphins or any other team. Can't really stop that. There's been other scenes where you'll see a player, you know, wearing a hat of one team and talking to a general manager of another team. They cite an example of, I think it was a character, Ricky Jarrett, is calling the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers take the call in their quote-unquote boardroom. And that's something that could legitimately happen. So the fact logos are being used there is not against the law, that they don't have to ask permission, because that could happen in real life. And it's not portraying the league or the teams involved in a bad light. So that's how they get around it. Now, how they would get in trouble, an example in some of the research I was doing was, if there's a player for the Miami Dolphins wearing a uniform and in the middle of a game, you know, he runs up in the stands and starts beating the crap out of a fan, well, that doesn't happen in real life. That would portray the Miami Dolphins in a bad light. That would portray the NFL in a bad light. And that's where the NFL and the Miami Dolphins could then take legal action against HBO and the show to say, you can't use our logos and portray us negatively, which would damage our product. So that's how they get around it. as long as the logos are used in scenes that are accurate and consistent of what actually happens in the NFL, they don't have to ask permission. And like I said, I didn't know any of this. I did a little research on this question because once I saw it and it did come to me, I never really, you know, put in a lot of time to think about the answer. So some research I did, because there was a few articles back from a few years ago when this was, when this show first came on the air, talking about this. So that, and I actually know, I have a friend who's a lawyer, and I contacted him actually, and he knows a little bit about copyright law. And he pretty much confirmed what was in the article, saying, yeah, that is true. So pretty much under the Fair Use Act, as long as you're using those logos, not in a way to damage the league in any way or the teams of such logos in any way, they're good to be used. So that's how HBO gets around it. And plus, like I said, in some of the research, pretty much everyone loves The Rock. It's just one of those things where The Rock's got that personality where people like him. The NFL has no problem with the show per se. I mean, I'm sure they probably wish it wasn't around because there are scenes when the logo isn't used that, you know, makes players not look, you know, like the greatest people in the world. Let's just say it nicely. So I'm sure in that regard, they probably wish the show was just not there or not on. But for the most part, they don't have a problem because they like The Rock. They trust him that he will do right by the league and stuff. So there's a couple factors in play, but that's a very good question there from Eric. And I didn't know it either, so thank you for sending that one in. Next question from Richard in Miami. Is there a chance a wide receiver like Lewis, Scott, and Ford, and I'm assuming, so could make Miami's 53-man roster? So he's asking if Isaiah Ford, Malcolm Lewis, or Rashawn Scott can make the team. Look, nothing's impossible. Nothing's impossible. Those guys play out of their mind in training camp and stuff. Of course they could make the team, but it's an uphill battle to say the least. It's a very uphill battle. Assuming everyone stays healthy, you have Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker, Danny Amendola, and Albert Wilson. Those four are locked in no matter what if they're healthy. Those four aren't going nowhere. Jakeem Grant, you know, odds are he's a lock, too. I'll make that group five, because I think Grant's a lock. Even though he's not on the level of the first four, he showed a little bit at the end of last year. He plays special teams. So those five are locks. Now, if Miami carries a sixth wide receiver, now you're coming to play with guys like Ford, Scott, and Lewis, and you also throw in Leonte Carew. Now, why Leonte would have a little bit of an edge, fair or unfair, and it totally is unfair, because where he was drafted and what Miami gave up to pick him, you know the front office wants him to work out. That they want to be proven right, that they gave up all those picks to move up and take Leonte Carew was the right move to make, and they want it to pay off and they want it to be good. So if they carry a sixth wide receiver, which I think they will, now that sixth guy might not be active most weeks, but I think they'll carry six on the 53. And if they do, it will come down to probably those four guys. Malcolm Lewis, Rashawn Scott, Isaiah Ford, and Leonte Carew. Leonte's got the edge, like I said, just because. But anything's possible. And it's not impossible. Here's the thing. It's not impossible that they make the roster. I think it's impossible that they actually play. For any of these guys to actually play, they're going to need a couple injuries. Because guys like Stills, Parker, Wilson, and Amendola, they're going to get a lot of playing time. A ton of playing time. So, will anybody actually see the field? Probably not. Could they make the roster? Yeah, it's possible. We'll see how that plays out over time, though. But good question there. Because I think Miami, look, even though they lost Landry, they still have a lot of depth at wide receiver and a lot of talent at wide receiver. And if all the guys, you know, play to their potential, or play like they have played in years past, it's going to be tough for any of those younger guys like Lewis and Scott and Ford to crack the line. It really is. This is a bad spot for a young wide receiver like that. There's far better teams where they would have a better opportunity to play. Miami's not one of them unless, you know, one or two guys go down with injuries, which nobody wants to see, obviously. But that's pretty much the only chance they'll play. But one of them probably will make the roster. And you throw in Leonte and you throw him in the mix, and we'll see how it plays out. Next question comes from LJ in Pennsylvania. LJ asks, this is something we've talked about a few times, so I won't spend a lot of time. But can Adam Gase survive another season where Miami doesn't finish above 500? Can he survive it? Yes. Should he? Probably not. Adam Gase, it depends. If the offense plays great this year, but the team loses games because they can't stop anybody on defense, yes, even though Adam Gase is the head coach, and he is responsible for that side of the ball as well, you might not want to mess with anything with the offense there. In that regard, he should not be fired. If the team is just an utter failure across the board, if 2018, this upcoming season, is much like how last year's went, 2017, then I don't see how you bring him back. I really don't. This is a league where it's what have you done for me lately. Nobody cares about 2016 anymore. It's ancient history. Nobody cares what you did year one. It's all about what have you done for me lately. If the injury bug hits Miami this year like it did last year and they lose a few guys, you know, so be it. It happens. Every team has injuries. Every team loses guys. It's not an excuse that can be used. So, like I said, we've talked about this a lot, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But they better win games this year. I think anything under 8-8 or so, Adam Gase is in trouble. And there would be a lot of factors in whether he stays or goes. But he's in trouble, so he better win games. Because honestly, nobody cares about excuses. Nobody cares about excuses. Excuse me. Nobody wants to hear the excuses. And from all reports, Adam Gase had a big say this offseason on who was brought in and who was let go. So this roster is shaped in his mold. Obviously, he let go of a lot of the staff and replaced them with quote-unquote his guys. So Adam Gase is a team that he helped build. And if the team does not win, that's on him. That's on him. So there's that. Phil from Macon, Georgia. This is a good question. Do you think Stephen Ross would ever sell the team? Well, here's the deal. Even if he did, we know who the next owner is. So it doesn't really matter. For those of you who might have forgotten or who were just never aware, back in 2016, the Miami Dolphins and the current owner, Stephen Ross, put in place a succession plan. Meaning, should Ross die or should he want to sell the team at some point, the next owner is in place per se. Now, it's a little more complicated than that, and I'll try to explain this because it's a little tricky. Not a lot of teams do this, but some have in the past. Pretty much, Ross has someone in place, and his name is Bruce Beal Jr. We'll talk about him more in a second. Bruce, he came to an agreement with Ross that was approved by the NFL and every other owner in the NFL at the time in 2016, that should Ross die or should at some point, whether it's this year, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, whatever, Ross wants to sell the team, Bruce Beal Jr. has the right of first refusal. And long story short, Bruce Beal Jr. didn't go through all this trouble to say no. So Bruce Beal Jr. will be your next owner of the Miami Dolphins. Meaning when Ross either dies or says, I'm selling the team, it then goes to Bruce Beal, who's already been approved by league owners, who this has already been approved by everybody. It's just about how much money he will pay to buy the team. And if you're wondering, well, what happens if Ross asks for a ton and this guy can't pay it? Two things there. One, not an issue. Not an issue for a couple reasons. One, this guy's worth billions, like a ton of money. And number two, this guy is like best friends with Stephen Ross in that Stephen Ross, years ago in the 70s, he's a real estate guy. He's a New York City, Manhattan real estate guy. And he started the real estate firm Related Companies, I guess it's called. And he was the CEO up until like a year or two ago, really. And this is like the second or third largest, if not the largest, real estate company in the United States. And one of his partners at the time was Bruce Beal Sr. So the two families are very close, very connected. They're almost like one family. They are so close. And Bruce Beal Jr. almost is like a son to Stephen Ross. So, you know, there's that. Second off, when Ross did step down as CEO like a year or two ago of related companies, there was a change of who's in charge, and Bruce Beal Jr., he became the president at the time. Not the CEO, but he became the president. So he's the president of the company Ross created. Like I said, the two families are almost one. He's like a son to Ross. The Bruce Beal family, senior and junior, together have a net worth over $10 billion. So money's not an issue. Ross is not going to look to milk this guy for every cent either, because like I said, they are almost close like family. And one other thing on Bruce Beal Jr. He is young. I mean, very young. So he will be the next owner of the Dolphins, and he will be the next owner of the team for many, many years, probably for the rest of our lifetimes. At this point, right now, he is only 48 years old, which kind of makes me a little nervous, I will say, because a young owner, as we've seen in this league, sometimes can be a little chaotic. Obviously, the obvious example is Dan Snyder in Washington. His first few years in the league were chaotic, to say the least. So, Bruce Beal, when the time comes, and who knows when it'll be. Ross, he's not a young man. I think he's like 78 or so. He seems healthy, though. I don't think he's going anywhere. But at some point, should he just put his hands in the air and says, I'm done with it. I don't want the headache of being an NFL owner no more. You know, this is going to be the guy. Because they didn't go through all this trouble to set this up for him not to be the guy. So Bruce Beal Jr. will be the next owner of the Dolphins. So I know some fans are like, Ross stinks. He's got to sell the team. Or Stephen Ross is terrible. I hope he sells the team. You can hope and wish all you want. He's going to sell to a guy who's pretty much his son. So don't get so worked up over that. And Bruce Beal Jr., like I said, already been approved by the league. This has all been approved by the NFL and the league owners. But he's worked with Ross for many years. His father's worked with him from the start. And he will be the next owner of the Miami Dolphins. The thing here, and I know, look, there's a segment of the fan base that are not fans of Stephen Ross. They can't get over some of the mistakes he made when he first took over the Dolphins back in 2008, 2009, 2010. Look, Ross, and if you probably asked him, would admit himself, those early years, he didn't understand how the league worked. He screwed some things up. But since then, you know, he's been great. Not many owners would have spent the money out of their pocket to fix up Hard Rock Stadium, or now it's Hard Rock Stadium, and put all the money into that out of their own pockets. Not a lot of guys would have. It's really not. And when it comes to the team, he is willing. He has given everybody, whether it's Jeff Ireland, Mike Tannenbaum, whatever you think of them, put that aside. He's given them pretty much a blank check to say, spend what you got to spend. I don't care. I just want to win. So he's the type of owner you sort of want. And he's the type of guy who he doesn't get involved in the football operations. Yeah, I mean, at first he did ask a lot of questions and sort of try to, but he sort of learned. He hasn't gotten involved. Obviously, there was the report from this year's draft. Even though he might not have been sold on a Minkah Fitzpatrick pick, he didn't force his hand and say, we're not taking him, trade down. He didn't. He just asked questions, which he's allowed to because he owns a team. So I don't have a problem with that. But be careful what you wish for, because the day he's gone, we don't know Bruce Beal Jr. from a hole in the wall. And even though he's worth billions of dollars, he might not be the type of guy who wants to spend it on a team. And he might not be the type of guy who will give whoever the general manager is or the head coach is a blank check to say, spend it on whoever you want. I just want to win. We don't know. We don't. Now, you would hope and think, because he's cut from the same cloth as Ross, they come from the same type of background, they're close, pretty much like family, he would probably run the team the same way. We can hope that. We don't know it, though. And you never know it until the guy's actually in charge. So just be, for those of you who want Ross gone, just be careful what you wish for, because we don't know what Bruce Beal Jr. will do or be. So there's that, because I've gotten a few questions like that, and I'm like, people, the next owner is already pretty much decided, so don't get your hopes up on something like that. Couple more questions. Julio, didn't say from where. Why do you hate on Jarvis Landry now that he is no longer in Miami? Again, I don't hate on Jarvis Landry. Once Jarvis Landry was traded to the Cleveland Browns and got his big payday, I was still, and I still am, I mean, for the most part, I still am, even though it sort of sucks some of the stuff he said of late about Miami. Jarvis Landry gave his all to the Miami Dolphins for 4 years. Anybody who's been a fan of Jarvis Landry cannot knock what he's done on the field for the Miami Dolphins. I have been a huge Jarvis Landry fan. Last year on this website, we worked with him and his people on his pro camp that he held in South Florida. He was super nice to us, super nice to me. The people around him, his PR team, his agents, are super nice to me. I can't say a bad word about the guy in that regards. Does it suck some of the stuff he said the past 2 or 3 weeks? Yes. Because I honestly think he doesn't even believe it. He's just saying it out of hurt and anger. And I don't agree with it. But nobody hates on Jarvis Landry. Once Jarvis Landry was traded to the Browns, I honestly thought, and I really do think this, well, not so much now, but I thought at the time, he's going to the Browns to get his big payday. And the way that contract was set up, it's really only a 2-year deal. After year two, the Browns either have to rework the rest of the deal or they will release him. I honestly thought he will go up there to Cleveland for a couple years, make a ton of money, and then once he's probably let go, he might actually come back to Miami, because I can tell you firsthand, with firsthand knowledge, he loved it down there. He loved it in Miami. He wanted to be a Miami Dolphin, and I think some of the stuff he said is coming out of hurt. And it's unfortunate, because I think any bridges that might have been there have totally been burnt. Now, that stuff can be rebuilt over time. 2 years is a long ways away. Who knows what will happen. But nobody's hating on Jarvis Landry, but you got to call it like you see it. Some of the stuff Landry said in the press the past 2 or 3 weeks is utter crap. It's lies. It's false. There's no way to put a spin on it. He has openly lied. And there's video evidence. There's picture evidence. I mean, it makes no sense. And I know there's been people who said, well, he's hurt, so he's entitled to say. No, you can be hurt, but that doesn't give you the right to lie. And that's where I think a lot of people lost a lot of respect for Jarvis Landry. Again, I don't hate him, but I'm more disappointed than anything in him, because I don't think he needed to take that route. I don't think he needed to do that. And it hurt, because everyone loved him. And even, I think, in a lot of fans I talked to of the Miami Dolphins, when he went to the Browns, we were going to root for him in Cleveland. We were going to root for him to be the guy, show the world that he is such a great player, more than just a slot receiver and all that stuff. But now, it's tough to root for him, to the point where it's almost impossible to root for him. And whatever happens in Cleveland, God bless him. Like I said, he might wind up in Miami again someday. It's a long ways away. But if the Miami Dolphins, let's say they have a few years here where they're winning, and Mike Tannenbaum ain't going nowhere, and Adam Gase ain't going nowhere, then I don't think there's a chance in hell Landry would be even welcome back. But who knows? If those guys aren't here in a year or two, anything could happen. But it's not, nobody's hating on Landry the person. It's just, I think we're just hurt by some of the stuff he said, because we know it's false. And he's going out there spreading a false narrative. And when I see somebody say that stuff, I don't care who they are, I'm just going to call them on their BS. And that's what I did on that one show, what a lot of fans of the Miami Dolphins did. They called him on his BS, because we all know it's lies what he's saying. And he's sort of spreading those lies, and that's not right. So if that's me, quote-unquote, hating on him, then I guess I'm hating on him, but I don't see it that way. From AJ in New York City, are you worried Miami didn't do enough to fix its offensive line? Yes, because Josh Sitton's not a young man, and when he guys of that age, they do have a tendency to get hurt a little more easily. And to me, Sitton's the really only change on this offensive line from last year. Left tackle is the same guy, Laremy Tunsil. Right tackle, is essentially the same guy, Juwan James, even though he didn't play a lot last year. It's the same guy. Okay, same guy. Left guard, Jesse Davis. I am not a big fan of his. I mean, he's okay at best. He wouldn't start for most NFL teams in this league. That's just being honest. And there's probably a couple teams where he might not even make the roster, honestly. He's just an okay player, nothing special. Center with Kilgore. You know, it's probably a wash with him and Pouncey, honestly. It's nice to have someone who can practice every day, but talent-wise, at this point, it's probably a wash, so not upgrade. So, Sitton's the key, because Miami's guards have been so bad in recent years. It's nice to have someone of a Pro Bowl level at guard, but Josh Sitton's not a young man. And should he go down to injury, that's going to be... then Miami's pretty much going to be trotting out the same line that they had last year where there were so many issues. So I'm happy they sort of got a center who's a little bit more healthy. I'm happy they got a guard in Sitton who we know can play at a high level when he's healthy. So, yes, I'm happy with that. Overall, might like to see them do a little more. And that sort of leads into the next question, which is also about the offensive line. Let's see here. From Linda in Davenport, Iowa. You often talk about linebackers being thin and weak on Miami. Shouldn't you be more worried about the backup offensive tackle position, where if Tunsil or James goes down, we are seriously screwed? Linda, very nice way to ask that question. You're right. The backup offensive tackle position, we have nothing. I'm sorry. Sam Young playing a couple games at the end of last season well does not have me sold that I want, if something should happen to Laremy Tunsil or Juwan James, Sam Young can hold down the fort and start for 4, 5, 6 weeks. Should there be meaningful games? Now, last year was different because Miami, you know, they were out of it pretty early. They were never a serious playoff contender. With Ryan Tannehill back there, I do not want Sam Young playing, protecting him at either right tackle or left tackle, and that's just it. And then if it's not Sam Young, you got guys like Eric Smith, unproven, don't know what we have there. Jesse Davis, you know, you could slide him out to right tackle or left tackle. Problem is now you just weaken guard and you're putting a marginal player at left tackle or right tackle. I know a team can't be deep at every position. I get it. But the backup offensive tackle spot for Miami is really bad. And that's just saying it nicely. It's really bad. So to the first question there from AJ, are you worried Miami didn't do enough to fix his offensive line? For the immediate starting five, I'm fine with what they did. But overall, the backup tackle position, I think, is a big question mark. Now, the depth at center and guard, honestly, I think is pretty good. Because should something happen to Kilgore or Jesse Davis, guys like Larson or Jake Brendel, you know, not the end of the world that they have to play or even start for multiple weeks. Because I don't think there's much of a drop-off there between those guys and someone like Jesse Davis or even... Kilgore. I mean, yes, there's a drop-off, but it's not significant enough where it would just, like, wreck the season. But if Tunsil or James goes down, that's a season-wrecking injury right there because the guys who are going to then have to step in and play. Now, if it's for one or two games, fine. But if it's for, like, half the year or more, then Miami's got a mess. They got a mess on their hands. So offensive tackle, Laremy Tunsil, Juwan James, every fan, light some candles and hope they stay healthy for 2018. Because if they're not, it could be a disaster. Two more questions and we'll wrap this up. This one's from C-Dubs. C-Dubs. He doesn't say from where. So C-Dubs asks, what if Gesicki and Smythe struggle in the preseason? Will Miami really go into the year with guys like AJ, Derby, and Marquise Gray playing significant times? Good question, actually. If guys like Smythe and Gesicki struggle a lot in the preseason and come the regular season, Adam Gase doesn't have faith in them playing a lot, they could go out there and look to add a veteran tight end. The problem is, how many tight ends are you going to carry? Most teams, you know, three, maybe four tight ends. But if you're carrying four tight ends, that means you're not carrying six wide receivers. So odds are you're only going to carry three. So if Gesicki and Smythe are two of them, are you going to drop someone like Gray or A.J. Derby for a vet who you're just bringing off the street? I don't think so. I think, obviously, if Gesicki and Smythe struggle to the point where they look incompetent right now, they would have to do something, Miami. They would have to do something. That's number one. Number two, Adam Gase can work around this in that since Miami is so deep at wide receiver, you run more sets with more wide receivers. You won't see a ton of three tight end sets on the field, or you won't see as many two tight end sets. So there's ways to sort of mask that, put a Band-Aid on it, hide that weakness, should those two in this hypothetical struggle that much, which I don't think they will. I think at least one of the two will at least show themselves to be a competent player ready to go by week one. But yeah, I don't think Miami would be out there looking for a veteran tight end unless someone so good fell in their lap. I just don't see it happening. I think Smythe, I think at least from a blocking standpoint, that translates from college to the NFL. If you're a good blocking tight end in college, it's not a big transition to be a good blocking tight end in the pros. And with Gesicki, I don't see him being it. I mean, look, there might be a transition period with him, but I don't see it being to the point where it's that much of a struggle. I think he'll be fine. Your question there, C-Dubs, it's valid. It's a valid question, but I'm not going to worry about it yet. Let's see how training camp goes. Let's see how the preseason goes, and we can reevaluate this middle of August, and once we get some real practices, once we get some guys in pads, and we see how everyone looks. Last question from FinFan for Life. Why did Miami let Michael Thomas go? Was it over the national anthem? I like to hope it's not, and it wasn't. I don't think it was, but who knows? Who knows? When this first broke, I did mention that last year, the three guys who week in, week out took a knee for the national anthem, which were Julius Thomas, Michael Thomas, and Kenny Stills. Two of them are now gone. Okay. Now you can say Julius Thomas, you know, he wasn't any good, so he had to go. That's fair. You can say that Kenny Stills, you can't let him go because he's far too important to the team, which is fair. Michael Thomas, and here's what I'll say, and I don't know, it could, look, they might have just wanted to move on because as a safety, he's really not that good. The Miami Dolphins had two guys who were free agents this year essentially play the same spot, which they are safeties who can play a little bit of cornerback, but their bread and butter is at their special teams aces. Those guys are Walt Akins and Michael Thomas. And Miami wasn't going to keep both. Made no sense to keep both. Because they're each the same type of player. So they kept the guy, though. They kept the guy who did not take any for the national anthem. Now, was that a factor in this in any way, shape, or form? I have no idea. The Miami Dolphins would never let you know that either. But they did. They kept the guy who didn't take the knee for the national anthem. Financially, maybe he was a little bit cheaper. But by little bit, I do mean very little because these guys aren't making a ton of money, either one of them. So there's that. But, you know, I don't know. That's just an honest answer. I don't know. And you know what? Nobody knows. Anybody who says that they know, they have no idea. We have seen with certain players in this league, not just Colin Kaepernick, there have been other guys who have sort of been blackballed. You know, they took that knee and they haven't been signed. Now, Michael Thomas signed with the Giants. He got another job quick. So, for him, that's great for him. Great. But there have been other guys in this league where teams have sort of shied away from even entertaining the thought of signing someone who did take an E for National Anthem, and that you're going to have that little sideshow headache week in and week out with that. So, I don't think it played a... Look, I don't know if it played a factor. I hope it didn't. I hope Miami didn't like not re-sign him because of that. Michael Thomas, like I said, he's a marginal safety at best. Actually, when he's on the field as a safety, he's a liability. That's just true. Now, so is Walt Akins, too. So I'm not sitting here telling you Walt Akins is Ronnie Lott because he's far from it. When either one of those guys are on the field as a safety in the second year, they're both a liability. Their bread and butter is special teams. So Miami, they decided to go with Walt Akins. I'm sure they had their reasons. I don't know it, and nobody would know it. But it's a good question. It's a fair question to ask because it's not unreasonable to think that the Miami Dolphins were like, you know what, we're trying to move on from this national anthem thing, and we just we can keep Walt Akins, who does pretty much the same role. We don't need two guys in the same role, so there's that. So that's a very good mailbag. A little smorgasbord of questions this week. Some stuff with HBO, some stuff with the ownership, and of course some current event stuff. Like I said, we'll be doing more of these mailbags here in the summer up until we get to training camp. Everyone be sure to check out the website. DolphinsTalk.com. Like I said, hopefully middle of the week we'll have the redesign ready to be unleashed and the new site. Fingers crossed we can that we can release that this week, so keep an eye out for that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk. If you have any questions you want to send in for the mailbag, send them in to DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. And also be sure to follow the websites that re-air this podcast. They are FinFanatic.com, FinFever.com, TheGruelingTruth.net, and Dolphin-UK.com, as well as the Facebook pages, Fanatics, the Miami Dolphins End Zone, and Dolphinatics. So check them out as well. Everyone have a great Monday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.